I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this day before Valentine's Day, the 13th of February. Our guest this hour, in his book, When Hollywood Was Right, How Movie Stars, Studio Moguls, and Big Business Remade American Politics. Our guest, Donald Crichton, says that Hollywood was not always a bastion of liberalism. Following the Second World War, an informal alliance of movie stars, studio moguls, and Southern California business interests formed to revitalize a factionalized Republican Party. Came together such stars as John Wayne, Robert Taylor, George Murphy, who joined studio heads Cecil B. DeMille, Louis Mayer, or Mayer rather, Walt Disney, and Jack Warner to rebuild the Republican Party. And they found support among a large group of business leaders. It paid off with the election of George Murphy to the U.S. Senate, Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan to the highest office in the nation. Donald is a professor of at the School of Historical, Philosophical, and Religious Studies, Arizona State University. He's authored many books, including The Conservative Ascendancy, How the GOP Made Political History, Phyllis Schlafly and Grassroots Conservatism, and Intended Consequences, Birth Control, Abortion, and the Federal Government. We'll be welcoming phone calls as we remember Hollywood and politics this hour of the program. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you would like to reach us that way, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Donald, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be with you this afternoon.
Well,
before Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I know, before Valentine's Day. It's a really interesting book because we tend to focus, and you actually spend quite a bit of time talking about the House Un-American Activities Committee and When Hollywood Was Left. The book starts that way, actually, with a controversy, which we will get to. But we don't spend very much time on looking at the forces that really helped elect two presidents of the United States.
Yes. One of the purposes of the book was not only to show that there were many, many Republicans, hundreds of actors and directors who were Republicans in Hollywood back in the 1940s and 50s and into the 60s, but also to cast a different light on the those terrible years of the immediate end of the Second World War, the Red Scare in Hollywood, but also, as you point out, When Hollywood Was Right, also shows how Republicans came together and were able to elect people to the highest office.
Let's go back to the 1930s for a moment. Is it fair to say that Hollywood started becoming political during the Depression years?
Yes, I think that's a fair assessment. Prior to the 1930s, Hollywood was people involved in the creation of a new industry. The movie business weren't very political. They were primarily interested in producing money, movies and making money. It's only in the 1930s that we begin to see signs of kind of a politicized Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
On both the left and the right.
Why? Why then?
Well, I think for a number of reasons. In particular, as I explain in the book, When Hollywood Was Right, that when Upton Sinclair was nominated, won the Democratic nomination for governor in California, it really activated a lot of studio heads, Louis B. Mayer in particular, to really campaign against Upton Sinclair. They were concerned about Upton Sinclair's plan to end poverty in California, in which he actually talked about nationalizing or taking over the movie studios. And the Hollywood studios threatened to move out of California, and but then they also undertook a well-orchestrated campaign against Sinclair. It was the most expensive campaigning in the nation's history at that point for a state election.
Mm-hmm.
Large sums of money were poured in to make sure Sinclair didn't win the nomination.
And was Sinclair
in the election?
Was he identifying himself as a socialist in that campaign?
Yeah, he won the Democratic nomination, but he identified himself as a socialist. He was he couldn't deny that. He had a long record of being a Democratic socialist. Now, it should be pointed out, Kathleen, that Sinclair was, even though he was a socialist, he was anti-communist. And, in fact, the California Communist Party opposed him. For reasons that went back to his involvement with the great Soviet director, Sergei Eisenstein, who he had a falling out with. It's a complicated story, which I go into in some detail and When Hollywood Was Right.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story, and Upton Sinclair is a pretty fascinating guy. First of all, that book, I think, influenced a lot of people my age or slightly younger who read it in high school and said, oh, no, what am I going to do about meat? But also that he came until, maybe I wasn't aware of Hollywood's influence, because my understanding was he came very close, or people thought that he might win that election.
Yes, I think when he was nominated by the Democratic Party, most people thought in 1934 that this was the year for the Democrats. And so he looked highly favored. And the incumbent Republican governor wasn't very popular in the state or even within his own party.
Mm-hmm. So what is it about Hollywood that makes people, some of them, I guess this might be an interesting question, is do a good majority of people, be they Republicans or Democrats, decide in Hollywood that they want to become involved in politics, or do a great number of those people, studio heads and everybody, remain apolitical?
Well, I think there's a gradual politicization. One thing to understand about Hollywood then as well as today, Hollywood is about making movies and making money. And so most people involved in the industry were not terribly political. And even those that were, especially Republicans, those who declared themselves Republicans, politics wasn't their entire life. They were making movies. They had very very writing scripts, and they were very very busy. The one group that in Hollywood that was on the left, that was in the 1930s and 40s, focused a lot of their time on politics were members of the Communist Party. That wasn't a large group in Hollywood, that is, members of the Communist Party, but they were pretty devoted to their politics and gave a lot of time and effort to political causes.
Mm-hmm. And partially they were, would you say, members because of Russia's involvement and help in winning World War II? Was that involved in their decision?
Well, not World War II wouldn't break out till 1939.
Oh, so this is before that.
Yeah, many had become members of the Communist Party beforehand. I think there were a number of reasons why people joined the party. And I think the primary cause was a fear of fascism. Fascism had fascists come to power in Italy and Germany. There was the Spanish Civil War, which appeared to be a war between the fascist and progressives. And so that activated a good number of people. But it was... But there were other reasons to join the party, too. I think for some, yeah, in the 1930s, if you were a screenwriter, let's say, you were making a huge amount of money compared to the rest of the country. And so I think there was this kind of guilt on one hand and a concern that there was inequality of wealth. And in addition to this, you know, it appeared to many people that capitalism had failed on a global basis. And the one system that seemed to be working, at least it appeared to at the time, was the Soviet Union. So I think that was an attraction for some of these people who joined.
You start the book with Ilya Kazan, the 1999 director, receiving an honorary Oscar, and the Hollywood left erupting in anger. It's a very interesting story. Why do you start the book with that?
Well, I think it kind of captures in this story in which there were protests against Ilya Kazan, who had directed On the Waterfront, a great film. They were protesting that he had betrayed the party, and had made names. He had been sent to prison, and then had a change of heart, and then appeared before HUAC and revealed people that had been members of the Communist Party. Being a member of the Communist Party at that time was, you know, it was secret membership. Those people who were protesting were living or were motivated by a history that had been written in many, many books, historical books, as well as novels and films about these terrible years. Mm-hmm. And so there were protests by some of the younger actors, Nick Nolte and others, at the award ceremony.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guest, and let me give you our number, 800-486-8655. Donald Critchlow is our guest. His book is When Hollywood Was Right, How Movie Stars, Studio Moguls, and Big Business Remade American Politics. Donald is a professor at the School of Historical, Philosophical, and Religious Studies, Arizona State University, and has authored other books, including The Conservative Ascendancy. 800-486-8655. We'll be with you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about When Hollywood Was Right this hour of the program with Donald Critchlow and welcoming phone calls. Jerry is our first caller from Fort Atkinson. Hi, Jerry.
Happy Valentine's Day to you and your guest, Kathleen.
Thanks. You too.
Three things today. I think most people forget that there was a very thriving film industry out on the East Coast up until about 1930-31. In fact, the Marx Brothers' first two movies, Animal Crackers and Coconuts, were shot out on Long Island. And they moved the film industry from New York to California to get away from SAG and unionization. The second point I'd like to have your guests talk about are these three real shadowy people in the 50s and 60s that propped up Reagan and George Murphy, Holmes Tuttle, Justin Dart, and our Milwaukeean, Walter Annenberg, who basically provided the financial structure for Reagan's ascendancy to power in California. And then I'd like to have your guests talk about William Holden, who is sort of a strange person in this story, because he was Ronald Reagan's best man at his second marriage, but I always considered him to be a very good union man. So those three things today.
All right, thank you. Starting with the move from Hollywood from New York to L.A.?
Yes, well, the move had begun earlier, but you're correct. There were still films being made in Long Island. And actually, Animal Crackers was written by Maury Riskin, who was a strong union man, but then later broke with the party and became an avid anti-communist. The Marx brothers, by the way, continue to remain on the left. The second question has to do with Justin Dart and of Rexall Drugs and Annenberg, as well as Leonard Firestone and others who backed Ronald Reagan in his run for governor in 1966. And Justin Dart, as well as others such as Walter Knox and Walt Disney and others, provided major contributions to the Reagan campaign. One of the interesting things I discovered in my research is that Justin Dart and Leonard Firestone in the 1964 California primary, which Republican primary, which pitted Barry Goldwater, a conservative from Arizona, against Nelson Rockefeller, seen as the representing the Eastern Republican establishment. Leonard Firestone and Justin Dart supported Rockefeller in that in the primary, and this had to do with internal California politics, which I explore in the book When Hollywood Was Right. They considered themselves conservative, but for kind of factional reasons, they backed Nelson Rockefeller. And then they switched to, and Reagan, who had supported Goldwater in 64, they threw their support to him and became integral to his successful race in 64 and then later onto the presidency. And what Ronald Reagan was able to do, as I explain in the describe in the book, is he was able to bring a very divided Republican Party, divided between kind of the moderate conservatives and the conservatives, very conservative wings. He was able to bring them back together in a very successful campaign. Ronald Reagan was a very adept politician. The third question concerned William Holden. And William Holden, much like Ronald Reagan, were strong union men. They were active in the Screen Actors Guild. Holden had been president of the union. Both of them had fought the communist faction in the Screen Actors Guild. And William Holden was a very strong Republican. And when the Holdens were very close friends with the Reagans, and William Holden spent a long amount of times talking with Reagan about politics, and I think he played a critical role in making the transition for Ronald Reagan from being a Democrat, even a left-wing Democrat, to becoming a Republican and a conservative Republican.
A very conservative Republican, moderate Republican? How would you describe his political philosophy as governor and as president? Did it change?
Well, I think what's important to understand about Ronald Reagan is he was a principled, pragmatic conservative. And he had core principles, which he believed in. He was stubborn on these principles. He was anti-communist. He believed in low taxes to help which he believed would strengthen the economy. And he also believed in a strong national defense. So he was willing to compromise in various ways, both in terms of his staff, in terms of his campaigns, and on issues that he didn't think were critical in order to get this his larger agenda through. And that explains, for example, why he selected George Bush as his running mate in 1980. He was a very, very adept politician, not only in being able to articulate in a meaningful way what conservative principles are to a larger public, but he was very politically skilled in when it came to the political arena.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. Thank you, Jerry. Patrick is next in Wisconsin Dells.
What a fascinating story about Ronald Reagan. Ironically, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, and he ate dinner in the same room where Nancy and Ronald Reagan were married.
Oh, really?
For this to come up about Ronald Reagan, but it's fascinating. Let me ask your this author. He used Hollywood like social media is used now in an essence. Don't you agree?
Could you repeat the question? I had a little problem.
Hollywood used what, Patrick?
Well, Ronald Reagan used Hollywood like a social media.
Oh.
Social media would be exercised as of now in a way as he brought all these people together. Would your speaker agree with that?
Yeah, so when he ran for governor, there wasn't what we, you know, the contemporary social media around. But he in the 66 campaign, he drew upon support from his long connections in Hollywood, actors and directors. And so when he ran for president in 1980, however, as I point out in the book, When Hollywood Was Right, that by that time Republicans were a dying breed, and so when he formed his entertainment committee, unlike past presidential campaigns, which always had a Hollywood entertainment committee with prominent stars around, Ronald Reagan, in the 1980 campaign, found that there weren't enough Republican stars around, at least any with recognizable names or many. So basically, the committee was a fundraising operation and not a list of Hollywood stars. They targeted studio executives and other people behind the scenes for donations, but it wasn't the kind of publicity, public relations committee that it had been in the past in previous presidential campaigns.
It's easier.
Does that answer your question? I'm not sure.
But yeah, anyway. It did. Yeah, but he used it as a platform, as to his advantage, to probably to as much as well as he possibly could. My question really was to ask you the FDR period of Hollywood, and wasn't there mandated censorship during the FDR's administration for national security purposes on what could or could not be produced?
Yes, well, there was any film that having to do with defense was and having to do with the FBI as well were carefully monitored. I wanted to describe it as censorship in that, you know, there was outright censorship. Hollywood at that point in the early Cold War years was anxious to promote national defense and kind of patriotic values, especially during the Korean War and as the Cold War heated up. And so there was a kind of, there wasn't a kind of, so I want to describe it as censorship, but basically an agreement, a consensus about what was in the national interest.
Our number is 800-486-8655, and our guest is the author of When Hollywood Was Right, How Movie Stars, Studio Moguls, and Big Business Remade American Politics. I want to spend some time talking about Richard Nixon. It's easier to understand how Ronald Reagan, who, because of his union background and because he was a glib speaker and popular movie star, it's easier to understand his connection with Hollywood and with the studio people than it is to understand why Richard Nixon was somebody who was endorsed, because Nixon had some problematic things going on in terms of HUAC and in terms of some of his campaigns. Why did Hollywood Republicans embrace Richard Nixon, and how did Richard Nixon court, if he did, Hollywood Republicans?
Well, first of all, the Republicans were anxious, especially in Southern California, to get one of their own people in a Republican in the White House. So they supported Eisenhower once he won the nomination. Prior to the nomination, I'll add that there was division within Hollywood Republican circles on whether to support Senator Taft, who was seen as Mr. Republican, or Dwight D. Eisenhower. You know, Republicans always have to fight among themselves. But once Eisenhower got the nomination, there was a great deal of enthusiasm for the selection of Richard Nixon as the vice presidential candidate. And Richard Nixon was pro-California. He was going to be supportive of building the burgeoning defense industry in California, and that was important to Republicans. It was also in the HUAC hearings in 1947 when Congress, when they came to investigate communist propaganda in films, in the hearings, Richard Nixon actually supported the film industry and said that and asked questions, leading studio executives to declare there wasn't really a communist problem anymore in Hollywood, and also gave them a platform through his questions, that is Richard Nixon, to declare that they hadn't been making pro-Soviet films. That wasn't their intention during the Second World War. It had been to promote the war effort. So Richard Nixon was rather moderate on that in those hearings, and the movie executives supporting him. Hmm. One of the interesting things I discovered, another interesting thing I discovered, is that when Nixon was elected, and Eisenhower Nixon ticket was elected in 1952. One of the dissident voices, and was quite dismayed by Nixon's election, was Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan had a very tense relationship for the next 30 years with Richard Nixon. They were both Republicans, but they were also rivals. And this was apparent in the Watergate tapes that were released, when at one point, after a phone call with Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon turns to Ehrlichman and says that Ronald Reagan is one of the strangest men he's ever he's ever met.
Interesting, yeah. You also, like Eisenhower, you mentioned him. Tell me more about how this may have happened with various candidates. Robert Montgomery, you write about, helped improve Ike's performance in front of the camera. And Eisenhower made groundbreaking use of television, the first president to give a televised press conference. What kind of training did Robert Montgomery give Ike?
Well, Ronald Reagan, I mean, when Robert Montgomery was an early supporter of Eisenhower's, and he helped him during the campaign and was so useful in that campaign in giving him media tips and so forth, that Dwight D. Eisenhower hired Robert Montgomery as a consultant, and Robert Montgomery gave a lot of advice. He, first of all, they set up a television studio in the White House. He coached Eisenhower to use more effectively his smile, to make crisper remarks, and how to make eye contact with the camera. So he was he gave Eisenhower very good media advice, and was and served Eisenhower in his during his presidency. Eisenhower so appreciated Montgomery's talents as a media advisor, he urged Richard Nixon when he was running for president in 1960 to use Montgomery as an advisor, but Nixon had his own ideas about media, and one can't help but wonder if it might have helped Nixon if he relied more on Robert Montgomery during that campaign.
If he had won those television debates, right? If Montgomery had coached him and told him how to use makeup and not sweat, that may have changed the course of history, huh?
Right. Well, Nixon had been ill shortly before that. And he had made a really strategic mistake by pledging to visit all of the states in his campaign instead of targeting battleground states. And so when he appeared on television in that first debate, you know, he hadn't shaved or he still had kind of that evening shadow, and he looked tired and not very vibrant. And as we know, people listening to the debate on radio, and we still hope that a lot of people do listen to radio, of course.
Yes, we do.
People thought that Richard Nixon had won the debate, but people looking at it on their television screens felt that Kennedy had won the debate. So media is going to become much more important. The one thing that is, which I discuss in the book, When Hollywood Was Right, Richard Nixon understood, as did other politicians, Ronald Reagan, that the media is important, but one needs to have a message, and just simply relying on the media to convey, you know, a snappy personality and good looks and commitment to family and loving one's wife and or spouse or whatever isn't enough. You need to have a message, and I'm not sure that holds so much today, but it's one would like to believe that the message is as important as the media.
Mm-hmm.
But today's campaigns, as we know, are mostly media driven.
You sure are. Yeah. Donald Crichton is our guest this hour. His book is When Hollywood Was Right, How Movie Stars, Studio Moguls, and Big Business Remade American Politics. He writes about the many conservative Republicans who once populated Hollywood. Given the relatively few in Hollywood today, he says, who are declared Republicans, this appears to be a historical anomaly, a brief period in the film industry. The Hollywood right is important because Hollywood conservatives led the way in taking control of the California Republican Party and eventually changing the political landscape of modern America. Here's our phone number. Join us if you'd like. We'd like to hear from you. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well. Talk about possibilities for joining us. They are endless. That's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcoming your phone calls for our guest this hour, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk at WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Just a general question, Donald, about how important Hollywood is, be you Republican or be you Democratic, in terms of winning an office. Is it important in terms of who may endorse you? Is it a big source of money in a campaign?
That's a good, very good question. I think the importance of Hollywood is twofold, which you've alluded to. First of all, is it's always been a source of money for political campaigns, and I think that's the primary importance. Whether having a star's endorsement really persuades people to vote for you, I think is much more uncertain. Whether Barbara Streisand endorses Barack Obama, for example, I'm not sure that persuades many voters. But the importance of Hollywood was in the Republican Party is that the Republican California Republican Party were going to send in off-year elections stars such as Gary Cooper and Barbara Stanwyck and Robert Taylor and Ginger Rogers out to speak to Rotary clubs and women's groups and local Republican parties to rally Republicans to the to rebuilding the party in California, which is one basically Democratic in terms of registration in the 1930s. And it escalated in the 40s and in the 1950s as people from states such as Wisconsin were moving to California for warmer weather.
Mm-hmm, right. And was there a belief among people in Hollywood that if you could win California, my question is directed toward campaigns for the California governor position, if you could win California, you got a way to the White House, you have a way to a national office, and if so, why they thought that way?
Well, absolutely. California had become a large state, was an important state economically as well as in terms of electoral vote. So it wasn't just winning California to become a red state. It was looking at national office as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the other stars who it may surprise us were very conservative people. Were they outspoken about their politics, the people that you mentioned in the book, all the time, or would we be surprised today to know, I guess we wouldn't be surprised to know John Wayne was conservative, but Rock Hudson, others who maybe were surprised. Rock Hudson was very conservative.
Yes, Rock Hudson whose name is mostly forgotten today. I guess he became starred in a number of films with Doris Day, another Republican, and kind of romantic comedies, but became got back in the news when he was dying of AIDS and HIV, and was well known in Hollywood circles for being gay. He was a very outspoken Republican, supported Goldwater, and had appeared at anti-communist rallies. So that was one of the surprises. We know Ginger Rogers of dance fame with Fred Astaire was a Republican, but so was Fred Astaire. Clark Gable was very anti-communist and a very strong Republican. Gary Cooper grown up in a Republican family, and was one of the strongest of the Republicans. And actually, in 1936, which I described, and When Hollywood Was Right, he took his own money to put on a national radio announcement against FDR. He really disliked FDR and the New Deal.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the others that were surprising were a lot of the television stars we now see on reruns. Chuck Connors was Rifleman fame, was really very active Republican. Richard Boone and Have Gun Will Travel. Ward Bond of Wagon Train was and John Wayne's sidekick was very, very conservative. In fact, so conservative that he refused to endorse Nixon because he thought Nixon was too,
really?
Too liberal.
Too liberal. Yeah. Nixon was too liberal. Jimmy Stewart was conservative, too, wasn't he?
Oh, Jimmy Stewart was very, very conservative and was a major donor to the Republican Party. His best friend was Henry Fonda, who was a man decidedly of the left. They talked one politics one evening, got into a shouting match, and then afterwards agreed that they would remain very close friends but wouldn't talk politics anymore.
It's maybe a pretty good idea. We haven't talked about Barry Goldwater, his bid for the nomination in 1964. What was Hollywood's response?
Well, the Republicans were, for the most part, were very, very Hollywood Republicans were very enthusiastic about Barry Goldwater. Most of the Republicans were conservative, and I think that campaign in 1964 that was really the turning point in Ronald Reagan's political career. He had a Citizens for Goldwater campaign, but when Ronald Reagan emerged as the leading star of the Republican Party, it should be said that many of the old-time Republicans, actors such as Robert Taylor, who had been married to Barbara Stanwyck, as well as Jimmy Stewart, really weren't at first enthusiastic about Ronald Reagan. Reagan had been a long-time, lifetime Democrat up until then. Hadn't changed his registration till 1964 to Republican, and they thought, you know, while they were in the trenches fighting the good cause for the Republican Party, that Ronald Reagan was an upstart. Plus, many people knew that Ronald Reagan was a liberal Democrat. And in fact, when Richard Nixon had challenged, was running for the Senate against Helen Douglas, Douglas, Ronald Reagan offered to campaign for Douglas, and Douglas turned down his offer because she thought that Ronald Reagan was too left-wing, and she was trying to steer toward the center.
Ooh.
So, in other words, Ronald Reagan had a kind of reputation of being a left-wing Democrat, and then makes that transition. So, some of the older Republicans, Stewart and Taylor, really weren't that enthusiastic. Of course, they became increasingly enthusiastic about Ronald Reagan.
Right. And where is Hollywood now, Donald?
Where's Hollywood now?
Yeah, is it? Are there still strong vestiges of when Hollywood was right?
Well, Hollywood has always been a pretty liberal town politically, even in the years I write about. Even though there were hundreds of Republican movie stars and studio executives. Even in the 1950s, even during the Red Scare, I would describe Hollywood as still basically culturally liberal. I think what happened, but Hollywood became swung to the left in the with the Vietnam War in the 1960s. So Jane Fonda was only one of many actors who became but who moved much further to the left. So culturally, Hollywood's always been to the left. It's I think it moved further to the left. And basically, there's a culture in Hollywood that if you're on the left, you're going to find it easier to get roles as actors and to get jobs as screenwriters and so forth. But there is what I would describe as perhaps an underground Republican party in Hollywood that's begun to take shape. Of course, there are visible Republicans such as Chuck Norris and others.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the 9/11 really began to change a lot of opinion and gave opportunity for some people who had been identified on the left to really come out and become more conservative. One other thing I should add, Kathleen, I think Republicanism in Hollywood is primarily, not totally, but primarily libertarian in their sentiments. That is, for supportive of economic freedom and kind of free market principles, but mostly staying away from the social issues such as gay marriage and abortion.
All right. Well, Donald, thank you so much for being with us. I enjoyed the hour. Thanks.
Well, thank you very, very much, and I hope it warms up there one day in Wisconsin.
No, I can't even talk about it anymore. And it started snowing so hard at noon, everybody just looked at it and went, oh.
Yeah, well, I want to give a plug for Phoenix Chamber of Commerce. I'm sitting outside talking with you.
All right.
It's about 70 degrees. Anyway, have a good day.
Yeah, right.
Enjoy spring.
Yeah,
okay,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Donald Critchlow, the book is When Hollywood Was Right, How Movie Stars, Studio Moguls, and Big Business Remade American Politics. And thanks to Cynthia Schuster for producing this hour and Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee, where it is no longer snowing. It was just a brief thing that looked like it was going to go on for the next month. But it's over. So that's it for this week. Have a lovely Valentine's Day. Monday, it's just one holiday after another. Yesterday was Lincoln. Monday, it's President's Day, and we'll talk about George Washington. Perfect conversation for President's Day, and that should be fun. And a lot of great conversations ahead and next week on our show. So thank you. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.